Welcome to the Draft Doctors Fantasy Footy Podcast with your hosts, John Crockett, Steve Fizz, and the Statesman.
Hello and welcome to the Draft Doctors, talking all things defender rankings on the show, going through our top 30 for the Dream Team AFL Fantasy format of your drafts. There is a Super Coach one out now with Steve and Jono, if that's your bag, baby. I'm Doss, and joining me is Gil's right-hand man, it's the third McLaughlin brother, Cam.
G'day, Doss, how you doing?
Good, thanks, Cam. And rounding out the Tres Amigos, it's the Statesman.
I have a slight strimple this week, and it's going to a very sad event that's happened on the weekend, but I'm blaming Cam. Cam Corns. Now, my thought process is, if you're going to make a ridiculous call that Dangerfield is more important in fantasy than Tom Mitchell, then you've got your little voodoo doll going out, putting little needles in the leg. So obviously that's what's happened. So I'm taking it out on you, Cam Corns.
Oh, see, and just to build on Cam Corns a little bit, I think that every week we throw to the Twitterverse a Corns vote. One of us is going to get rewarded or awarded the Corns for the week. The Corn of the Week is a new thing. Let's bring it in. And we'll start off with Doss getting it because it's Doss. Thanks, buddy.
No worry. Well, you wait and see. I will be. I'm going for the Corns Award today. There's something coming up later. You'll see. All right. So obviously there's some big questions surrounding defender rankings due to the rule changes in 2019. What are our takes on the new rules? And what do we think should be happening in the fantasy scoring? Statesman, what's your thoughts?
Well, firstly, it's a little bit concerning. So whatever you do here, it's going to make or break your season, depending on where you put the players. So I'll take it hashtag off-brand at the moment. My first thought when I heard about what's going to happen with the scoring is taking a crazy option and in AFL fantasy having six premium defenders who are going to get that potential 10 to 20 point lift. But we all know that it may not be anything that we're expecting now, because the coaches will be looking at that, how to close that down, or how to make the most out of what the rule changes are. So we actually, none of us really know whether it's actually going to help defenders, hurt defenders, help ruck, hurt ruck, etc., etc. So who knows? Ranking the defenders was just a nightmare, I will be honest, because we're guessing right now. I think we can say that any data we get from previous year's kickouts can be almost null and void, because it's a different style of kickout. And only the JLT and probably the first six rounds are going to give us a true indication of how this is going to affect. In other words, what I basically said is, I have no fucking idea, Doss. Why did you ask me that question?
Let's see if Cam has another take on it.
Well, I just think there's... So everyone's going into this assuming that a kick out is going to count as a disposal and a plus three. And I think there's probably some other ways that champion data might go with. My secret squirrel sources have told me that it's going to be announced in the prospectus as to how they'll be handled. However, there is always a chance that they basically, to not dilute the disposal pool, make it its own stat, kick in, and give it a plus one, like a ruck tap out. And that then is going to change the entire, everything that we're talking about today will shift dramatically.
That still could be a plus 10 point.
Correct.
But a Kate Simpson might actually be a minus five, because half the time that he took a kick in, which is plus one, he was doing a plus three because he was kicking to himself, then kicking.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've got sort of another take on it as well, is like, we know that they will... Okay, say we do get the plus three or even the plus one. It's going to benefit the kicker in a regardless. They're going to get a stat if they weren't those players that were already playing on. But what if the team tactics change significantly with the ability to play on quickly after this? So like my example would be, say Connor McKenna was used by Essendon a lot because he's a fast runner and just bangs it long. What if instead of getting the accurate kicker out of there, you get the guy that can sprint and gain the meters gained sort of thing and just bomb it long. And then instead of having the accurate kick in, you get the players that are more quick on the burst. Because isn't the whole idea it's supposed to be quick and fast moving?
Yeah, and it's a good point. But I think that in my perspective anyway, I'd take an accurate kicker and hitting the mark rather than gaining an extra 20 metres from someone sprinting and potentially turning it over straight away. And not that I'm saying Connor McGann is a terrible kick, but if I can take a safe versus a risky option from my defence, it's always a safe option.
And I think you're both half right and half wrong, and I'm fully right, in saying that they will look at the option of a quick runner who has good disposals.
Yeah.
And I think that's the actual answer, because you've got so many more options with a player like that. You can go short, you can go long, and you're already taking the 10, 15 metres which they can run.
Yep.
So I don't know exactly the disposal efficiency of a player like this, but a Nathan Wilson, to me, looks like the type of player that will be good to kick in.
Yeah, 100%.
All right, so there's so many things. What you were saying before, Statesman, we have no fucking idea. All right, let's get to the ranks. Cam, we'll go off your rankings.
Well, wasted 5 minutes.
Yeah. We'll go off your rankings and then debate. Take us through your top 10, Cam.
Yeah, we'll go top 10. I actually think these will be pretty cookie cutter, and it's quite... there won't be much debate, but we'll see how we go. So number one, Lloyd. Number two, Laird. Number three, Whitfield. Number four, Blakely. Number five, Sick Dog. Number six, Witherden. Number seven, Simpson. Number eight, Zach Williams. Number nine, Tui. And number 10, Luke Ryan.
So I've got to say straight away, I understand, and I've sort of done a similar thing where Lloyd and Laird are taking one and two, but that's on last year, and we've got no true evidence to drag them anywhere else. My first real argument, and although I put number three on him myself, was Whitfield. Because now Dylan Shield is gone, I believe that the tag goes to one or two players. And I believe one of them is taggable and the other one isn't. So like a Dane Zorko, I think Whitfield is someone who's susceptible to a really good tag. And I think we're going to see more 50s and 60s out of Whitfield this year, purely and simply because Dylan Shill isn't there to take away that defensive pressure.
I don't know. What about, though, in the second half of last year, did Kelly missed a bunch of time too? And would you say... I know Shield's been a tag target, but Kelly missed a lot of time and Whitfield still was putting up really strong numbers. Whitfield averaged 106.5 from rounds 11 to 23 last year, which is like the best of all defenders, by the way, eligible this year. So you'll still be worried, though. Like with Kelly back in the side, yep. Does that almost cancel it out?
No, because it's, do you tag Dane Beams or Dane Zorko? Well, one of them is going to crumble under that pressure. That's why Zorko becomes the main target. I should say that the difference between Zorko scoring is always whether Daniel Rich plays or not. And this was more the case with Shield with Whitfield. And I think Kelly, who was pumped out after being tagged at 160, has proven that he's already got the skills to work through it. I think the Shield move is good for Zerit. It's bad for Whitfield. But it was really hard understanding of where on the ground is he going to play was where to place him after that. Because I'm not convinced Sicily, who I've got at six rather than five, has got a big uptake with this. Because I don't think he's going to be the one kicking in.
Mm.
Who is that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I was looking through that squad, but I think they want the balls in Sicily's hand, but I think they want it to be a little bit more creative than kicking out at fullback.
Okay.
Yeah.
Briefly talking about sort of tiers, how many of those guys do you consider like in your top tier in that bracket? Is it just the top two or three? How do we go there, Cam? What do you reckon?
So I've got two tiers there, Lloyd, Laird, Whitfield. as my top, and then I've got Blakely in on his own tier at the moment because I think there's a gap after Blakely. Statesman, how about yourself?
Yeah, I've got five in the top tier, and I really can't divide them because I'm thinking that there's a potential that Laird drops. There's a potential that Whitfield drops. There's a potential that Blakey goes up. Now, that's whether he's in defence or in the midfield, but I think he's more likely in the midfield. And our main man to go up, I believe, that is the one that's got a little bit of pace and good with skills, is Witherden. And I actually are taking the punt that I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up being the number one defensive scorer in 2019.
Big call.
Cool. Hey, another one, just one that I sort of noticed. You've got Luke Ryan in pretty high, both of you, I think. They're both in your top 10, is that correct? I think Cam has him at 10.
Yeah.
So he averaged 76.9 last year, but he averaged 67.5 for the last 10 games. So is that just the fact that Blakely, you think, will move into the midfield, or there's just a bit of change in the back line there?
Yeah, I think he's a kick-in specialist on the previous. Now, this is a game, it's a bit of guessing, but he's the one that had one of the least kick-on to himself. So if he gets the plus one or plus three or plus two, depending on what actually happens with the scoring, he's one of those that is going to go up. Now, they like the ball in his hand. He's also an intercept marker, so he can get that cheap one. And I think he takes the Blakey role and then keeps doing the kick out. So there's two upsides for Luke Ryan.
I think I still think he's going to be very good next year, but the only concern is that because he is that intercept marker as well, they use him on the perimeter and they use Wilson as the primary kick in, and that may impact his overall score, but I still have high hopes for Ryan as well.
Just concerned, like I was pretty high on him too until I just saw he had a 20-point drop off from his first 10 games to his last 10 games. I was wondering if you guys knew why largely that was. I didn't catch a heap of Freo games in the second half of last year, that's all.
To be fair, he has a coach that's Ross Lyon.
Fair enough. Okay.
Some things you can't just always explain.
All right, well, before we get into the next 10 ranks, please support us by dropping us a rating and review on whatever podcast format you listen on. We are now also on Spotify and Google Play. We're up to 85 reviews. Let's notch up the ton before preseason. All right, Cam, take us through your dream team defender ranks 11 to 20.
Okay, so 11, we've got Newman, 12, Jeremy Howe, 13, Shannon Hearn, 14, Michael Hurley, 15, The Heater, 16, Jimmy Webster, 17, Hamish Hartlett, 18, Jason Johannesson, 19, Shane Savage, and 20, Jamie Crisp.
The one that jumps Hartlett is very high, in my opinion. Very high. Where was it? 17?
Why do you think he's very high?
Well, he's fresh off an ACL.
Because he's 17.
He's fresh off an ACL, and that was his highest output in many years, and we only had 5 games of data where he was actually playing well.
But it was also a different role for him. So he played it very, very well. For Port, were quite successful over that period, and I would find it hard if they, given the exodus of Pittard, who would be his only challenger in that role, why wouldn't he be doing that same role? I understand his ACL. He's definitely an injury risk. There is so much data that says players that come back from ACLs have a decline in scoring and generally, are more likely to re-injure. However, 17. Like, I actually think that's quite fair.
Stato, what do you reckon? For me, I just thought, just the injury, they've got a few. I think we had this discussion like a few weeks ago about how many names that could just play that role in the back line. And you're right, probably Hartlett, the way he was playing last year, definitely will be that guy. But I'd just be concerned with the amount of like mouths to feed in their back line, which is a strange thing to say, but they've got a lot of guys that could fill that similar sort of role. I don't know.
I don't know what I'm more confused about, my own brain trying to work out whether it's data or data, or why you would consider any Port Adelaide or Western Bulldog so-called defender if that's where they're going to play. And the mouths to feed comment I must admit, DOS is just about perfect. So it's a you're sitting in a tree with a bit of straw and a bird's hanging with one worm and there's 25 trying to grab at it. That's what it feels like at Port Adelaide. Now, I can guarantee you one, two or three of them might end up in the top 40 defenders, but which one it is, I'm totally unsure. I'm hot on Riley Bonner, so I had him in the top 30 for a period in mine, and then I looked DBJ, then I looked Hartlett, then I looked Houston, and then I go on, hold on, we haven't talked about the great man that's come from Hawthorn. And I'm going, hold on, Jonas can score pretty well too. Leonard, he looked really impressive at the end of last year. Hold on. 1 second, how many of these guys are actually going to get a game of footy? How many are going to play 22? So I can't rank any of them until I see actually what's happening. My problem is you go and back Houston in while he's having a run of averaging 82 over 6 weeks, and then 4 weeks later he's out of the team because DBJ's got his slot. I am just staying away. Let the bottom feeders go. Some young chick's going to get that worm. Let him have the worm. I'm picking the players that are going to do well, and I'm going to spend an early draft pick and get Witherden, and especially in a keeper league, and he's going to be one of my best defenders for a long period of time.
It's a great take there. Big, big section on Port Adelaide, showing some love to my boys.
And I will say that Steve has picked Hartlett at number 47 in his top 50 defenders, and I still reckon that rating is way too high, Cam. 47. Oh.
Wow.
So ACL
injury in fantasy terms is a 2 year injury.
28 years old too.
It's a 2 year injury.
So I just want to go through. So 47 being too low, I'll snipe you a bit there by saying here are some names that aren't in my top 30, right? And all of them better than 47. Cade Colo, Jaden Short, Ryan Burton, McGrath, Wilson, Langdon, Hanley, Robertson, you know, like, you're saying that he's worse than these people. Is that correct?
Sorry, I'm just waiting for you to say something interesting before I actually start listening, Cam. I'm just quickly going through, and sorry, this is on the Hartlett thing, and some of the names you mentioned, I'm sure, if I was listening, I would agree are probably better than Hartlett. But I will look at now, he has played in all his years of footy one season where he's played 22 rounds. And he was playing, I would assume, a midfield role, which averaged 96. And he has played only two other seasons where he's played more than 19 games. And one of them was an average of 70, which was where he got his defender status from in the first place.
I just don't like going off the 5 games data, whatever you want to call it. But yeah, anyway, and I'd also like to rescind my Port Adelaide and my boys comment. I just meant that they're from Adelaide, but they are certainly not my boys.
My boys.
Is there any other ones that stood out in those 10 to 11 to 20 region? I think Hurley's one that I just wonder about, but like, I don't have any quarrels with putting him where you put him, but he's played that lockdown role, particularly late in the season when he played on Franklin. And just worried that he'll play more of that role when they've got the players that can really rack up those disposals back there, instead of playing, just play him that lockdown a bit more maybe next year, because he was thrived in that role. He got best on ground, I think, and he would have had like 30 fantasy points or something like that. Is that an issue you're worried about?
Yeah, he was very low.
Yeah.
Hurley's a very good player, and from memory, Cam, he would have been top 10 scoring defenders the year before last?
Yeah, correct.
So I'm a lot colder on Hurley than what Cam is, but his good scoring year was the one-off, and so I predicted for the 2018 season that he would drop right away, so I just stayed away from him in all forms, and I'm just a little bit cautious of him. I understand he's probably a way better super coach player than he probably is an AFL dream team, so I have this thing, rightly or wrongly, against age and against key position players, there's some unique talent that can break the mould there, and that's a Matthew Pavlich, that's a Lance Franklin sort of thing. But most of them I stick away, and I think Hurley's had some injury issues as well. So I would say mines are biased a lot later than Cam's.
Yeah, and just to, for me, there's an uptick in his scoring over the last 3 years, I'd suggest. So he's, and this is maybe where I would like to sort of let everyone know what I see as a good defender. You know, there's probably 2 to 6 defenders that will go upwards of 90 in a season, generally. And it's probably going to be a little bit more this year with the rule change, but that's my guideline. Anyone from 85 to 90, I see as a really useful defender, right? And I rate them quite highly. We've got his last 3 years at 83.1, 94.1, and 83.7. I think he's got the talent. I think he's very good. For me, that's an adequate ranking for him. But I understand also, Statesman, your point around age, injury, and similar, why you might take him a little bit lower.
Are there any other names there before we move on to your 20 to 30?
There's one that I want to pick at, Statesman. I see Kolodziejczyk at 18. Can you throw me a bone? What's going on with Kolodziejczyk?
Well, actually, what you really should have picked up is the difference with Crisp. So you've picked 20 and I've picked 12. I think that's a major difference. Now, Kolodziejczyk, I decided to sneak into my top 20, and although we need to see what's happened, because if we gauge of what's happened in the past 18 months, that looks like a pretty depressing statistic. But I'm sure a club like Melbourne does their research, and I don't think that you get someone like a Kolodziejczyk, aka Steak Knives, without actually ensuring that that's what your club needs for the long term. KK is a high quality player. We certainly know that. He's a ball magnet. We certainly know that. But he has had the concussion issues. But I will say, so did someone else in Melbourne. So did someone else running around with a helmet in Melbourne.
Sweet Gussie.
Who averaged 66 the year before he broke out and ended up being in the top three defenders. I'm predicting that that's something else that's going to actually happen to KK. I think the difference with a Brayshaw versus a KK is one I think can average 110, the other one I think can average between the 85 and 95 mark. And that's probably what I'm expecting from him on the wing. Now, I think I could have got a lot stronger with that, but I actually want to see it. So I am a little bit hesitant, but I think he is a potentially very much a top 10 defender this year, and I've gone conservative going 18.
Right, and I've got Crisp at 8, you have him at 12, Statesman, and you've got him very much lower than us at 20, was it, Cam? Yeah, do you want to walk us through that quickly before we move on?
I did it a couple of weeks ago in regards to like where I actually think he'll drop off a little bit. He'll be the sacrificial lamb for the midfield time at the Pies. And again, it's pure speculation, right? But I see him as probably the least quality and necessary in that midfield unit. Taylor Adams is at most people's scapegoat for this going into the year, but he's probably one of the best in and under midfielders in the group. So I find, and he's not good at any other role, to be fair. When he was playing off the half back a couple of years ago, he wasn't great at it. He butchered the ball a lot, and that's why they moved him on. It was fantastic for fantasy, but it was terrible for the Pies. I think Crisp, you'll see him playing a bit more of a pure defender role rather than running through the mid, and that's the only reason why I've got him at 20.
That's fair enough. Let's go through your 20 to 30 ranks, Cam.
And this is where it gets pretty interesting as well, because like I was saying to Statesman just before the show, you've got like a big group of people that are going to score over 80. Like really, really big. Like those names that I read off before, all of them have the potential for going over 80. And there's more, right? And they're not even making the list. But I'll go from 21. We've got Lockie Weller, going to Callum Mills, Christian Salem, Jared Harbrow, Bashar the Boxcar Hooley, Wayne Miller, Bailey Williams, Brody Smith, Tom Stewart, Matt Suckling, and an unlucky 31. And this is pure speculation, but Ryan Clark.
All right, Stato, what are the differences there? What do you see as the big calls?
Yeah, look, I'm very interested again, and I know Smith return last year from an ACL. But again, anything like that that I'm suspect on, I avoid. And I've been on Brody Smith quite a few times waiting for that breakout, but it's actually never eventuated. Then you've got an injury risk added to it, is just a purely avoid for me. Now, Jared Harbrow, I will say he's on the wrong side of 19 for me. That's how much of an ageist I am. But he's actually getting right up there. And he has been really disappointing with his body in the last 2 or 3 years. So again, a Harbrow who can score well, we know this. I just avoid him off the list, quite honestly. It's good to see that we're all looking after Callum Mills, and I think he is one where most of us are expecting a big bump for this year, but he really hasn't done it. So it's going to be interesting to see how that all falls into place. But what's your rationale of having Jared Harbrow as high as 24, Cam?
So for me, it's the trade of Stephen May more than anything else. So Jared Harbrow is the only other reputable kicker at the Suns for the kickout. And I think even though, first of all, the Suns are going to get scored on a lot because they're terrible. So he's going to be kicking out a lot. It's just as simple as that.
I'm actually wondering what's actually going to happen with Lockie Weller. So he's the type of model that's quick and good disposal that I can see getting major rewards out of this. Now, the only other option is that you use him as your running defender or you put him in the midfield. So I only see an up year for Lockie Weller.
Pretty interesting, actually. I agree with you, but I don't know enough about the Suns because they are so terrible to watch that I just can't get into doing a lot of analysis on them. And so
why have you pumped up George Hall and Smith so much then, mate?
Mate, because he was a cat.
Right.
I've seen it.
Silly
man. But Lockie Weller, every pre-season team listing has him on the wing. He's not playing defence necessarily this year.
All I'm saying is I can see him as he's an upside either way.
Yeah. Agreed.
I just don't know how many games Harbrow is actually going to play, and that's where the issue comes in.
Yep.
One sort of big discrepancy I've kind of noticed here as well, not discrepancy in terms of both of you have similar rankings, but Tui, you've both got in the top 10 at 7 and 9, Statesman 7, Cam 9, but you've both got Tom Stewart in that 20 to 30 range, one at 24 for the Statesman, and way down at 29 for you, Cam. They weren't like very different throughout the year. Tui averaged 91 nearly in the first sort of half of the year. Tom Stewart 84, and then in the back half of the year it was only 76 for Stewart to 79 for Tui. Stewart's coming into his prime here. I think he's one maybe that could be a little bit higher, Statesman.
Yeah, I'm just thinking that the rule change are going to benefit the quick and skillful, and to me that's Tui.
Okay. I thought Stewart's quick and skillful as well.
I think he's quick, but I think he is going to be more the working on the opponent than work off the opponent. So I don't think they want the ball to go through him all the time.
Yeah.
But the game that they played last year, I think suited his skill set. I think rule changes will bring him back to what he was, which is a defender first and then a playmaker second. I think Tui's the playmaker first, then the defender second.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So that's probably one of the biggest sort of changes we've seen, I think, in this list in terms of the negatively affecting a ranking potentially due to the new rule changes. Are there any other sort of names that stand out here in terms of the 21 to 30 range?
I think I'd love to discuss Ryan Clark. So, like, I found it really hard not putting him in the top 30, and it was only because I didn't want to have another clip on the You Suck show, to be honest. But I think he could be anywhere, like, pending role. He's a very good player. Statesman, what do you reckon?
I'm fearful because I think he's got some great potential, but I'm fearful he's another Brody Smith, Liam Duggan, Ryan Clark. There seems to be one each year we're expecting this midfield to break out. Is it going to be Callum Mills? Is it going to be Ryan Clark? Who we just sit around and look at that and go, wow, they just averaged 66 to 72 again. And that's what happened to Liam Duggan. I don't know how many times I heard Archie say that he was going to average something 85 plus, and we never saw a thing, Archie. Archie, nothing.
Hey, another ranking I've noticed here. Cam, you have Bailey Williams in at number 27. Statesman, you don't have him ranked at all. I know you've said already you're not really enjoying the Western Bulldog type players with potentially the coaching situation there. Walk us through, he's not in your top 30 at all. My boy, Bailey Williams.
Yeah, not enough games, not enough data. What's the other word? data.
Statesman or statesman?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And also, I just don't have faith of what role they're going to play. So, and I suppose I'm trying to use the rankings of where I would pick them up. So the way I put my top 30 is if every time I come up with a selection that all those players were available and I had to pick a defender, who would I go next? So I wouldn't take the risk with the Port Adelaides and the Western Bulldogs because I simply just don't know what role. Are they going to be tagging this week? Are they going to be in the midfield? The McLean and Dunkley issue is now, it's simple. McLean was the number one midfielder out of those two. Until he done his shoulder, then they replaced because they wanted him to take him out of the heat. Dunkley went in, but geez, he performed well. So anyone that says it's McLean's role or it's Dunkley's role knows as much as the rest of the team management for the Western Bulldogs, because I don't think they even know who's right to go in there. And then you throw in, you're going to have Liberatore come back into the system as an inside midfielder as well. So I'm just sitting there going, I don't understand. And Taylor DeRay, why isn't he in the top 30 as well? I mean, it's the thing that the Western Bulldogs needed was another flanker type, because they just haven't got enough on their list.
Yeah.
And actually, that's the point around Bailey Williams that, again, I'm probably judging this a little bit too much off all the team lists that have come out, right? So the predicted top 22s, they've been on AFL.com.au, they've been on a whole bunch of other sites as well. But what got me excited and what I sort of predicted a bunch of shows back was a shift from Doss's boy Bailey Williams from defence to the wing, and every team is listing him on the wing. That has me a little bit excited, and the main reason why I've got him in my top 30. I think he's an athletic runner. He's a beast, and I've said before that I think those proper athletes with good agility and good pace are going to succeed a lot this year in fantasy, from a fantasy relevance perspective. That's why 27 for me is adequate.
Well, I'm coming in for my Cam, my Doss Corns nomination for the week. I've got Bailey Williams at number 9 in my rankings. So I have a feeling he's going ham this year. He's only 20, 21 years old, coming in for this big season. And if you didn't have a look, those last games before he got injured, he was actually another guy that was running through the midfield and looked phenomenal. I just remember the game that he played in that last game. Oh, he was sensational. Kicked a snag, just did a spin move. I was like, all around it. Anyway, I have him at number 9. He was consistent throughout the year too, close to 80 in the first half, over 80 in the second half. And I feel like he's ready for that next step forward. I know the issue is what Statesman's already gone through. How many people do you need? But I think class will go to the top, and I think Bailey Williams is ready. He had 52 disposals in an under-18s game too, so that's also in the back of my mind. Still ready to go. And my other hot take, Doss Corns, Jaden Short, I have him up at 12. He was way down for you guys. Jaden Short at the Richmond Footy Club, 82.5 in his last 12 games. And I know Bashahuli's coming back. Bashahuli's the point that you're going to make, Cam. I see you coming in. But he took 54% of the kickings for the Tigers, 23 years old. And I just think even if Richmond now become this team that chip it around a little bit more with the new setups going on, I just feel like Short's going to come in as a really valuable defender. What do you guys think, Statesman?
I've got Short at 23, and I think he deserves to be there. I mean, the only thing, I wouldn't mind a little bit more information on him, because we've only seen one season so far, and I see so many players that go and have one good season, or one good game, or three good games, or a spell of six games. So I haven't seen enough for him to be in the top 20, but there's a period last year where he looked like he could be generally a top 10 scoring defender, and that's what I liked. And I think he's got the type of skills and the type of speed that I think is going to be really beneficial to the new style of game, yet to be proved. With Bailey Williams, it's a hot take, and I wouldn't put him in the top 10. He's the most he's ever played is 14 games before. So, but in saying that, it doesn't mean you're wrong. But I think you've proven before by putting your boys in teams how well you've gone, Doss. So maybe you should listen to our advice. But in saying that, I wouldn't have him in salary cap teams by any stretch of the imagination. There's no discount. You're paying pretty high dollars for him. But a fourth or fifth defender, it could be really worthwhile and a season defining punt for you. So I think there's some merit in what you say, Doss. It's the first time I've ever said that about you. So congratulations.
Thanks very much, Stato. I'm staying still, to it. I still, want that nomination.
Still waiting for, I'm still waiting for my appreciation there, Stato.
Yeah,
I'll just,
yeah.
Yep,
I don't think it's coming, mate.
Hey, we've gone through the top 30 now, lads. Is there any smoke?
Wait. I've got a quick couple of points. Sorry, okay. Jaden Short. I just want to quickly say I had him as early as 21, and moved him out. I agree he could be anywhere in that range. And the second one, Bailey Williams. We saw you, Doss, draft Alex Witherden as a second pick in your fantasy hour draft. So look at how the cards have fallen, and all of a sudden he's anywhere from 4th, 5th and 6th ranking as defender. You might be onto something with Bailey Williams. Who knows?
I'm getting in early with my fire hot takes anyway. So is there any other smokies or potential breakouts for either of you guys before we get to some questions, Stato?
I think there's a potential apology for a 12-month period with Luke McDonald, because if we were talking this time last year, we probably would have had him in the top 15 or so. Now, I don't know if it's game plan, pre-season issues, injury or change of role, but he, in the scoring side of things, really dropped away where we thought his potential was quite huge. So there's a little bit taken away. So it's like there's a bit of freedom given to him with them boosting their midfield and their wing, and releasing some of the extra numbers and role players within that defence. So there's a potential that Luke McDonald could step back up. I've gone conservative with him, but if we were talking this time last year, we could have been talking top 15 potential in the 85 sort of area.
Cam, have you got any other takes?
The only one will be just to keep an eye on Dylan Robertson. Like, just have a look how he goes in the preseason in the JLT games. His heart may explode at any point, but I think he's got a couple of good years under his belt. And he can probably, you might be able to pick him up pretty late as a bargain.
I see one that stands out massively to me as well, and it's got a lot of question marks around it. But just looking at the old Draft Doctors rankings from last year, and Stephen Jono doing the Supercoach pod this year, but they have on their rankings from last season's defender rankings, this is how high he was rated last year. Ryan Burton for Steve came in at 16 last year, and for Jono at 17, and he is not even in any of our top 30s, I don't think. Is he the one that could potentially break out if everything just falls right for him at Port?
Absolutely. Especially if he's the one to take the wing role, because Hawthorne were talking about him becoming a midfielder forward. That's on the early days. That's how highly they rated his ball-carrying ability as well. And great skills, as we know. He could take the intercept marks, all those type of things. So there's a lot to his game. Again, I just avoid it because he's in the Port Adelaide squad now, And you're already hearing that Riley Bonner's taking the wing position from Polak. So, and I go, well, maybe DBJ was going to get there. Maybe Houston was going to step up. So I just went the whole scenario. Yes, Ryan Burton is a risk reward and it could be massive. But at the end of the day, Port Adelaide, too many, no thanks.
One that I just want to quickly mention that we haven't mentioned at all, and it's probably through his fantastic 2018 season average of 68.7 that we've missed him. But someone who we shouldn't forget and who is bloody good to watch as a footballer and has absolute pedigree for scoring well as a defender is Michael Hibbard.
Yeah.
He had a stinking 2018, but you go back to from 2013, he's 87, 89.3, 79.5, bit average, 92.5, and then last year 68.7. They've brought in two more defenders. He's a dashing defender. Where does he fit and what's his role going to be? You're going to be able to pick him up pretty late, because a lot of people were burnt last year. I just reckon keep an eye on him. Like, he could be one that you pick up pretty late and he ends up averaging 92. That's pretty good. Pretty good.
Pretty good indeed. There's one last one for me as well, and this is a huge injury risk, and I've got him way, way down as well due to this reason. I don't have him high at all, but because he has the potential to be a top 30 if he's ever healthy again in his life, is Pierce Hanley. 30 years old. He's had an injury every year. He's probably played two games in the last 10 years, but he has the potential to really go big. And he went 98 back in the day when he was playing a solid role next to Rocky in the guts. And he had 78.5 points in his last two games last year. But, I mean, injury risk, he'd just be a late pick for you. But he could produce really solid value if he's ever healthy again. Anyway, finishing off with some questions from social media. You can find us at The Draft Doctors on Twitter or The Draft Doctors on Facebook. Cam is at The Potato Bake. The Statesman is at Statesman33. And I'm at HKDOS. Let's get to some questions. This first one comes from Kip. Assuming Robertson is given the all clear to play, where do you rank him? So I think you spoke about that before, Cam. You got any more on that?
Yeah, no, I haven't ranked him. Like, I have him unranked at the moment because I haven't gone beyond 30. I'm going to be doing that in the next couple of weeks. But I'd have him pretty close to that 31. So I had Clark at 31. He might slot into probably anywhere between 31 and 35. And to be fair, he's one that you can grab and maybe hope that he ends up being a top 20 defender. So you're probably getting some pretty good value. There's probably enough negative to maybe hold off on him, and the rest of the league will probably either have forgotten who he is or have that heart problem right in the back of their mind.
Yeah.
So we'll see how we go.
Do you think you might be able to get some more value out of Jimmy Webster as well? If all falls right, he might drop down a bit due to the fear of Robertson. And then if Robertson doesn't end up coming back at all, or, you know, doesn't find that thing, who do you reckon is the better value in terms of Webster or Robertson in terms of value?
I think Webster is probably still better. Robertson, I think the only, if I'm considering who's going to be impacted by Robertson, it's more Shane Savage. But I think of the trio, you'll probably still see Robertson coming in third.
All right, the next question comes from Kyle. Is Blakely the real deal? Now, Statesman, what do you think on this one?
Oh, absolutely. He's already shown that he's got massive scoring power. His time on ground was an issue, and there were a couple of games where he played defensive roles, which I don't think you'll see again, that he struggled to score a bit. But he's got a massive ceiling. Consistency takes time. He's got enough pre-seasons under the belt now. Hopefully his body stays good. I think that's the biggest challenge for him, to be honest, but I don't think scoring's going to be an issue.
Yeah, and hopefully no more surf trips as well. This one comes from Adam. Corey Ellis, James Aish, Tom Williamson, Blake Hardwick, Hunter Clark, discuss. Does anyone want to discuss those players? Can
I go top and tail for the players? So I'll go tail, Corey Ellis. I don't even know if he's going to make the best 22 at the Gold Coast Suns. And even then, can he score well? It's probably... I mean, you're throwing a dart at the world's smallest dartboard and you're probably not going to hit. And then the top of it, I think, would be someone that I'm pumped about, Hunter Clark. One, great name.
Mm.
Two, I genuinely think he might be running through the mid this year at St Kilda. So we'll see how we go.
And James Ashe, any thoughts on him?
Yeah, I think he'll benefit from the new game style.
Yeah,
I think he's a very good player. He's one of those players that for years and years and years, he's had so much potential. And from a fantasy perspective, he hasn't met it. And from an AFL perspective, he hasn't met it. But I think the new game style will give him more space, allow him a bit more decision-making time, and might give him a bit more of an opportunity. And realistically, he was very good when he was playing last year until his injury.
Yeah.
You know, you pick him up off the waiver and he was getting your 80s. That's pretty good.
Jake Pizzuto asks, what is the upside in Luke Ryan and Nick Newman? Did we talk much about Nick Newman? I don't know if we did.
I think we
touched on Luke Ryan, but yeah, sorry, Stace.
Is Nick Newman, I think we had him 11 each. It's just more of a case that he's got a fair chance of being in the 22. Game time for Newman means points.
Yeah.
And although neither of us have put him in the top 10, because it's not always the 140 points that he can score, he has got a ceiling. I don't think he's going to be their number one ball magnet or number one player that they want to go through at any stretch of the imagination. He can just win his own pill. Can read the play really well. So he'll get enough to be around there. I think Luke Ryan, we talked about reasonably well before. I think in the rule changes, it's very likely that he is going to be the one that gains. He was kicking out a lot for him last year and wasn't playing on himself. So he's got one of the highest percentages where he can increase, whether it be the 1, 2, or 3 points. So I think that's where the big gain is. I think Luke Ryan, I actually put in the top 10. Newman I had in 11, and you had him right beside Cam and 10 and 11 yourself.
Yeah, I think Newman's probably a secret that everyone knows about.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things where I reckon if you're playing on pure data, you're drafting him maybe 18, 19, 20, but because of the hype that's surrounding the player, he's going to go way earlier, and I've put him up my list because now I want to take him earlier as well.
I think Ryan, you'll find, will actually come at a fairly big discount. So I think you're looking at round 16 plus before Ryan goes off the board. But those, and this is always the case, if you're hot on him and you've got that take, there's a fair chance that you're going to get him because you're going to go a little bit earlier. You're going to go round 12 to get Luke Ryan. And I think that's where some of the value really comes in. Where I reckon there's a world where Callum Mills gets actually picked before Luke Ryan. And it's because of name and potential rather than anything else.
That's statesman's world, right? No one really wants to live
in that
world.
It's a wonderful world to live in, mate. Well,
Kyle asks, could we see Whitfield tag this season as Shiel has gone? And I think we touched on that as well. You guys think, yes, he will be the tag target because he's susceptible to a tag instead of Kelly, who can just bust out of him. The next one, also from Kyle, he asks, will the new kick-in rules negate some of Rory Laird's points as he was always getting the quick short mark from the kick-in? Now, this may not be as prevalent this season. What do you guys think? Anyone coming through there?
Yeah, I think that has some potential, but we are guessing. So who is actually going to be the person that kicks out for Adelaide is probably the biggest question we need to ask first. If it is that quick, good disposal type player, we've got to be mindful. People are probably thinking that that's a Brody Smith. But if we look at Brody Smith's disposal efficiency, he's more of a long kick than he is a very accurate kick, which is two different things. So he can create on a halfback flank or a wing kick that's going to get into that forward line where they've got some great marking options quickly, which is going to help the team. When you're doing this, you actually want a really good disposal from your player. So I'm unsure who that is. Now, wait, maybe Wayne Miller.
Oh, very nice. Haven't mentioned him at all this pod either, I don't think.
No, we have. He's sitting in there at 26 and 27, respectively, and that's probably part of the reason, Statesman. So the one point I want to make around Laird is that I think there's a misconception that just because we're allowed 10 extra metres to kick in or whatever the number is, that all of a sudden the short kick isn't on.
Yep.
I actually think the short kick might be on from that extra 10 metres, and it's just that the short kick gets you to the 50 rather than kicking you to the square where the bomb's going to get you.
So, because we're talking defending in this episode, I've got a final question for you guys. What movie do you defend to the death despite negativity towards it? While you guys think of one, I've got mine. It's Cat in the Hat. Great movie. It's the post-Austin Powers peak for Mike Myers. Absolutely underrated. I think it's got like a 3.2 on IMDb, but I will defend it. It's one of my favourite movies ever. What about you, Cam?
Yeah, I'll jump in there. And it's only because it was recent, but Basketball. I finally got my wife to agree to watch the movie, and we almost divorced. And I was pretty keen on the divorce, to be honest, after that. But to be fair, Basketball to the death. A brilliant movie.
Statesman, any hot takes?
Oh, I have to, quite honestly, I need to go one that sort of got panned by the fans, but the reality was it was still funny as heck. And that is The Meaning of Life.
Right. That's the old Monty Python bit before my time. I think I have checked it out, though, Statesman. Not a bad flick.
It is.
Not a bad flick. Far out. Yeah,
I can't remember.
Statesman, I feel like Monty Python is brilliant in everything they've ever done. Ever.
But The Meaning of Life did get absolutely hammered because it went from great storylines, Life of Brian being one of the most classical films in history, to going back to a sketch comedy show. Because it was bits and pieces. There wasn't a thorough story. So it got panned.
Is that just a flesh wound one? Just to remind.
No, that's the Holy Grail.
Ah, okay. Well, I don't know.
Which is before
Life. I better check it out. Sorry, millennial life. Thanks for listening to the Draft Doctors podcast. Check out the Supercoach pod with Steve and Jono and drop us a review. Let's get to 100. All right, see ya.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Draft Doctors podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and review.
All right, I'm just going to stop because I'm going to go tell my housemate to turn off the washing machine because it's making background noise. Give me 2 seconds.
Please don't edit that out.
I couldn't hear it until we opened the door.